Witness 6. There's a storm coming. Who ever knew the heavens menace so? Casca, Act 1, Scene 3. Papa Raphael called me back inside after everybody was gone. He didn't seem himself. With me, anyway, he had always been friendly and kind, telling me stories or just wanting me to be around him sometimes. There was something else right now. He looked sad and serious. "One thing, Robert."
"What, Papa?"
"I need to tell you what's been happening to me."
"Happening to you, Papa?"
"I called your mama to have y'all come over here because I've been hearing them talk." Papa was sitting at that same kitchen table where me and my friends had sat. His eyes were closed, sweat beginning to roll down his face, and his big, long hands were folded together. I thought they might be shaking.
"I can hear them, Robert. In my sleep, in my awake, I can hear them."
"Hear who, Papa? What are you talking about?"
"The binders. I can hear them."
I was confused and scared. I had never seen Papa looking like this. He had folded his hands, his arms across his chest, thrown his head back, and was rocking from side to side. I didn't know what to do.
"I shouldn't be able to, but I know I hear them, those binders. They must be getting stronger in the storm. And I think I'm wrong in this time, Robert. Just like they wrong in this time. I think that's why I can hear them."
With his hands holding the sides of his head now, he was rocking and moaning.
"Get some paper. Get some paper and a pencil, Robert. I want you to write down what I say."
When I came back into the room, I found Papa on the floor, curled up like a baby, holding his head and moaning. It took a while to move his 6'8" body, but I got him up. After a little rest, he started talking in this voice that wasn't his. I almost forgot to write down what the voice was saying because I was looking in Papa Raphael's eyes that had gone from copper brown to a bloody red. But I wrote down most of what that voice said, a voice that was like no other I had heard.
"Only we binders know what stood to be gained or lost with this storm. Once discovered to humanity, it would be just another of those dangerous hurricanes that come up this time of year. As with all things from the beginning, there was a season, a hurricane season, June to November. This one, then, was within the right time frame and in that way would not look unusual. As with so many others before it, this storm would rage, might come to land, might do destruction. None of that would be taken to have any great meaning. It would be just one of those big Louisiana storms. In the realm of humans where we binders will want to go, those Creoles and Cajuns knew there was some good chance it might come their way. That was always true. Even though one had hit them a year ago, they were not panicked. They always said, 'Que sera, sera.' All they really cared about was that they would hear quickly and in time that the storm was going to hit Acadiana. Then those who wanted to would have time to leave the swamps and their little tattered homes and find strong shelter. Nothing unusual in any of that. Only we binders who rode in it knew that this storm was like none before it. Because of the heat of human self-hatred, the first binder had warmed to power and slipped the seal. There are only 7 seals. Each seal covers over forces that, if let loose, would destroy the balance in the world between good and evil. For each seal, there is a binder, one whose job it is to hold the seal in place, knowing that if it became unsealed, the binder would be free to unleash its own spirit of evil unto the world. Being a binder, you see, is a curse, not a blessing, a punishment and torment for harboring great evil in one's heart with no thought of repentance. Each seal is held in place by the spirit it holds captive. That evil spirit is a glue holding the seal in place and condemning the spirit to an existence without movement, without power, without grace. It, who was binder of the first seal, was the most evil, filled with the most hate of the beginning and humanity. This great evil was controlled by the first seal. Even we, the other binders, feared the first binder. We knew already that the unsealing of the first seal had allowed the first binder to change what humanity called their history. Events had happened that should not have happened. To a rare few, events that should have happened were now only a memory of something that didn't happen. Despair was growing where before it was being held at bay. Acceptance was creeping in where before real hope had been on their minds. As for us, commanded by the first binder, we ride the storm, ready to do battle to keep the seal open and the imbalance permanent. We ride the hurricane.
The night before, we six had gone to Papa Raphael's house. Eleanor, my sister, said I had been moaning and groaning in my sleep. She knew because I slept in the same bed as her that night. Eleanor was pregnant, and she had come home because her husband, J.C., was out of town. All the beds in the house were taken, though, because our cousins from Texas were visiting. That's why I had to sleep in the same bed as Eleanor. When I had come in today, Eleanor was home, big as a house. I had gotten home later than I had told Mama I would. I was supposed to have been at a special rehearsal for a male quartet I was in at school. I don't know what about me gave me away, but Eleanor knew I hadn't been at any practice. When Mama asked me about practice, Eleanor started talking to Mama about her pregnancy, distracting Mama and keeping me from having to lie. Later on, Eleanor asked me where I had been. I could tell she knew something. I had to tell her the truth, that I had gone to the new wall at Friloco with Davi and Earl. We all said Friloco, even though the second part of the name was Cove. Nobody said Cove, except the nuns. We had gone to Friloco to see what we could see. Davi could always get his mother's car, even though he had just gotten his driver's license. Yesterday, he had talked with me and Earl about going to the wall to look around. It was a new wall. I had told my parents that we had this quartet practice after school and that I wouldn't be home until 7. When Mama asked about me getting home, I said I would walk. I guess she was getting used to this walking thing with me because all she said was, "Be careful, Shay." I think I wanted to go with Earl and Davi because I really didn't understand this whole wall thing anyway. Some of the walls we could see every day. There was one right down the street from Holy Ghost. If you walked out the front of the churchyard, turned right and walked for 2 blocks, you came to one of the small walls. It was made of those stone and brick and bricks and was about as high as the top of a basketball goal. On the other side of that wall was the white Catholic church, St. Landry Parish Catholic, and the white Catholic school, the Academy of the Immaculate Conception, AIC. Daddy called walls like this one local walls. He said they were put up in locations where white people didn't want to give up places and buildings they had used for a long time. That's when I realized there hadn't always been walls. I had wondered because when we went uptown, whites and colored shopped in the same stores. We just had to wait until a white person was waited on first, and we couldn't touch anything without permission or eat at the food counter in J.W. Lowe's. It made it confusing, having colored and white in the same stores. But what I came to understand was that the walls were mostly around neighborhoods, schools, and towns. That's why the white public school got moved to the other side of a wall, and that's why me, Davi, and Earl were heading out toward that new white community called Freeloco. What's so different about these outside walls, Davi?
I don't know, Robert. That's why I want to see this new one.
I think they're probably just taller, that's what I think, Earl said.
We're almost there, so we'll see, said Davi.
I had never been to Freeloco before. All I knew was that it had been built for the white people who didn't want to have any contact with colored people. There was a wall on every side of that town. For me, it was a surprise that we headed out in the direction we did. Like I said, I had never been to Freeloco. I thought that we would go towards Lafayette, but instead we went out of town on the Washington Road, past Holy Ghost and the wall at St. Landry, the white Catholic church, past Food Town, and then there was the sign for Nuba. We teased our classmate Cornel about being from Nuba, because he lived out in this direction. Now we were passing his house and the place where all those fair-skinned Donatos lived in separate houses. Neil's sister, Mary Ellen, was out front, but Davi didn't blow the horn. We really didn't want anybody to know we had been out this way. Right next to the Donato corner was Slim's Waikiki Zydeco Central. I'd only been in Slim's once, but it had been fun. Daddy let me go with my older brother to hear our cousin, Mr. Clifton Chenier. People call Clifton Chenier the King of Zydeco. Daddy said he was real popular in France. I thought that was cool. Slim's wasn't that big inside. The afternoon when I was there, it was packed with colored people, Creoles of all skin colors. Everybody was dancing or at least moving to the music. While Mr. Clifton played his accordion and his band members played drums, fiddle, and the washboard, everybody danced, moved, and smiled. Daddy was smiling. Yeah, the real reason I got to go to Slim's was because Daddy was going to be working there as a parish deputy sheriff. Since with him there, nobody would dare even think about letting me buy a beer, he said I could go. When Mr. Clifton and his band started to play I Like Cornbread, that's when I got a real show to watch. It was like one huge being moving the way everybody bounced and rocked to the beat at the same time. Then, after a while, people started moving back to let this couple have the dance floor. Both of them were small and short. They moved together, bent left and right together, fast-stepping, holding each other so close, and moving so well together that it looked like all four legs were attached to the same body. That was Zydeco dancing, a fast, zigzagging two-step with bending and swaying all at the same time. That's why it was something to watch. Then I looked over at Daddy. He was moving to the music like everybody else. That 10-gallon Stetson hat of his was bouncing up and down. In that smoke-filled, crowded little place, Daddy was moving to the music. His thick lips were pushed out as he whistled along with the accordion melody and Clifton Chenier's voice. My daddy was rocking and whistling to the music. I was thinking back on this as we drove past Slim's Waikiki, going up the Washington Road on our way to the new wall at Freeloco. A couple of miles down the road from Slim's, we came to the light at Nuba. Once you got to Nuba, you could see why we teased Cornel about being from there. All Nuba was, or ever would be, was a red light and Duos. Looked like there were 1,000 signs attached to the front of Duos Produce Shack.
Gator! They sell gator meat!
I shouted out.
They sell everything there, Davi answered.
It seemed to be true, as Davi drove onto the parking lot and let us take a few minutes to look over the signs. Fresh honey, hot boudin, bell peppers, dry shrimp, hog head cheese, pecan pralines, everything. I think we all would have liked a link of boudin, except we knew we couldn't go inside. This wasn't one of the places where colored could buy. After a while, we drove on. This part of the drive was new to me. I liked the green of the fields we were passing. Some of the fields were just open fields. Some had a little pond, and some had a horse or two grazing about. I really liked the sugarcane fields. On the drive, I noticed one spot, a ways back from the road, where you could see a little house. That house sat in the field, with sugarcane growing behind it on each side. It looked as if the Raphael tall and green sugarcane held that house in its hand, like the sugarcane was there to take care of the house, and not the other way around. When we got to Friloco, it was easy to know we were there. It was a wall made of stone and brick, like a local wall, but it was so much taller. We all had thought we might be able to climb it and see over the top. We started up. After a while, even with the uneven stones to hold on to, we knew it was impossible. We came back down and drove partway around and didn't see an entrance. It seemed pointless then. This was a bust, man. Yeah, but it was your idea, Davi. I don't care, Robert. It's still a bust. It's not really here, you know.
What?
What are you talking about, Earl? Davi asked.
It's not really here. It's some kind of trick.
Earl, look at it. That's a big damn wall to say it's not there, I said.
Yeah, well, maybe it's that it's not supposed to be here then. I could see that it can fade away if things change.
Davi looked at me and I looked at Earl. Davi said, let's go home. Believe what you want, man. That's your business. On the way back, we were listening to KSLO. There was a report that the new hurricane had turned again. Now it might just come to Louisiana. They were warning people who lived near New Orleans to be ready to leave on short notice. Earl said, Hurricane Betsy seems to want to come here. I don't know why, but I think Betsy has some business to tend to here. And now she's made up her mind to come tend to it. Not knowing what to say, Davi looked at me. We both just kept quiet after making quick eye contact. Davi dropped me off a couple of blocks from home. When I got out, Earl was still mumbling something about the walls fading and the hurricane coming. It made me feel funny to hear him talk this way. Maybe that's why I had that funny dream that Eleanor said had me moaning and groaning last night. In the dream, Hurricane Betsy had come and brought the bitterness she had with Louisiana inside herself. I'll never forget the dream. Somehow, I was inside the hurricane. I was scared. Its wind moved in giant waves with pelts of rain that hit with a sting. Lightning flashed without pattern, like a million lightning bugs gone mad. I was scared. What frightened me most was that I realized the hurricane was alive. I didn't think that just because it moved. I mean, it was alive like a person. This wasn't just wind and rain whipping around. This was a living, feeling, thinking thing that had been forced to be born and now struggled to stay alive. The hurricane told me that. It told me. It spoke to me. It said, I am born of a battle between good and evil. In any war, there are times of heavy fighting and times of retreat, rest, silence. Always, though, there is the war. For a battle to begin in earnest, certain forces must be gathered together, organized. Soldiers, rations, artillery, and munitions must be put together. A march toward the enemy sets out. Fear and determination mix with resignation as the march goes forward. Then the time comes when the two warring forces meet, and that meeting place becomes the battlefield. Artillery explosions and the explosions of soldiers are everywhere as the two forces crash into and off of each other. I
and born of a battle such as this between good and evil, one battle in the midst of the eternal war. Sometimes, you see, among the spirits such a battle goes on and on. The clashing forces seem to join into a fury, a ferocious whirlwind. I am the whirlwind, the fury that has resulted and that will go on for a time, raging and raging, moving without apparent purpose from the sea onto the land. I am the fury. The humans have named me Betsy. Inside me, I carry the forces of evil, those who force my existence at this time. They rage against good. But I am different, because this time the good is not represented. Not yet. The evil rages in search of the good. Where are they? The seven. Where are they? The evil cries out. The evil has risen up this time, thinking it can win. And so the evil directs my motion, trying to find the good that it knows it must fight and defeat to claim the ultimate prize, an advantage in time for evil itself. The first binder rose up inside me and took control. It made it known that all along it had a purpose. There was an enemy, this spirit said, an enemy to be confronted. And this spirit that the others called the first gave me a new course, a new mood, through which my power raged. Now for their purpose, not mine, I move towards their enemy. They seek to fight their enemy, called the Seven, so that the first can remain awake, uncontrolled, conquering all that would be righteous. I am their vehicle. I bring them to the place where they say they will fight the Seven. I am powerful wind and rain, yet I am moved by the will of those seven spirits, the binders. I am helpless. Without my own purpose, I move toward the seven who are to be destroyed.
That night at Papa Raphael's house, I went over to Miss Edmonia's to call Mom and tell her where I was. I couldn't really explain to her why, except that Papa had asked me to stay for a while. He was asleep, but he had told me to stay with him while he rested. Now I was back and was sitting with him when he woke up and started talking.
I can hear them, Robert. They're close. That storm, Betsy, they're in that storm.
Shh, Robert, shh. Listen, listen. Then his voice changed, not really understanding the meaning of it all. I wrote what the voice said.
Naught had happened like this before. This we know, for we have watched since the great fall of the first. It is the first who stood with the beginning. Being so close, so much like the beginning, is what caused the first to stumble, to try to overpower the beginning. We six were the generals to the first, and so we fell with that great spirit. After our falling from the beginning, we have seen everything, and naught has happened like this before. Even as we grew this hurricane to be our ship, we felt the Bondoukour begin to pump. Where we intended to go, there was a spirit sent to the humans, a spirit that repelled our force. That spirit was one and many, seven at the same time, made available to seven. Seven who were called by the beginning. Seven who were strong in a way, but weak with lack of knowledge. For a time they repelled us only by their presence, not by their intention. So we moved to and fro until we became strong enough to go forth directly. Then our ship, this hurricane, carried us to the place of destiny. We came in a storm to claim our birthright. We came with and for the first binder. We, generals of the army of the first binder, knew that there had to be a great battle fought in this storm. This battle, we knew, would determine the course of events for humanity. We knew that when we won,
it would become harder and harder for them to ever find a way out of their greatest calamity, and so we would prevail for a very long time. As well, we knew who the six were that would fight us, and so we sent one of our lower commanders to give them dreams. Dreams that they would not understand. Dreams to frighten them. Dreams that would confuse them and that they would not want to tell others. We sent them Kushma. Memories. We sent them memories they would think were dreams. Real memories, except those were memories that no longer matched their reality. Memories that troubled them and gave them pain because they were memories of things that for them had not happened. We had begun the battle before they knew there was to be a battle. We sent Kushma with dreams and memories to frighten, confuse, discourage, and isolate them from each other. For we knew that if only the six came, there would be no battle. We would defeat them. We knew that there would be a hard-fought battle only if the one with discipline comes. Only then would the six become the seven and have a chance to call the remedy. We knew all this and were ready for the battle. All they knew was, there's a storm coming.